Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing well, of course. And I'd like to improve the conditions of the world, which is something like I think about.
Yeah,
but
a little bit.
We have a long way to go. At least if that is a goal in our lives, is trying to improve the conditions of the world or the conditions of our country, it looks like we'll have a job for a long time to come, because there's a lot of slipping and sliding. And even though our country got started off on the right footing to a large degree, And we did care about personal liberty and minding our own business to a degree, we've drifted a long way. In these last 100 years, we have slipped a long way. So we really have a job cut out for ourselves, and especially since we're involved with the foreign policy, it's a shame that we have to be so busy. Because if we had the non-intervention, the foreign policy, we wouldn't have to know all this geography stuff, you know. And this is one today we want to talk about, what's going on with Iraq and Iran. And that involves geography again, because things are changing. It isn't just the American Empire. And we note that, we're at 16 years since shock and awe. And I remember shock and awe very, very clearly, because that was sort of the climactic end of probably almost a year of me talking on the House floor and why this was a stupid thing to do. And there were a lot of people making the right predictions, but boy, I'll tell you what, the people were pumped up. They still had the 9/11 in mind, and they, by this time, they were able to convince the people that it was Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
It was all his fault. Back then, it was all Saddam Hussein, not Iran. Now it's a little bit different story. And anyway, the big day on the 19th of March, was the 16th or 19th?
19th
of March, the shock and awe finally came. And there's a few things that I remember so clearly, just annoying things, because I was speaking out a lot. And we were getting some attention about it. There was a group of us in there doing that. But about a couple of days before this actually occurred, I was in a Republican meeting, and it had Republican leaders there. It was a Texas meeting. And the leaders came in, and one of them was so ecstatic and just like, you know, this is the football game of the year. The big game is on, and it's going to be shock and awe. You can't believe how quickly this is going to be over. And it was just almost obsessed with this goal in mind. I kept thinking, what have I been talking about? I'm trying to tell people this is stupid, and we don't have any business doing it. That Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, but they won the PR war. You know, all the propaganda that was on, and the people were behind this. Not many people complained about it, and I'm sure the first day or two they were ecstatic. We were winning. Winning meant, we lost about as many troops in Iraq as they killed of our people on 9/11.
Yeah.
But how many other people have died, and how many other people are still dying from the desolation of that? But today we want to talk a little bit about, we've expanded our deepest concerns toward Iran. Iran is the greatest enemy. And all of a sudden, this thing that was supposed to be shock and awe and over and we would own Iraq, all of a sudden things aren't going so well. And there's now developing a coalition. And the Iraqis and the Iranians that we enticed into a war in the 1980s and killed a million people, all of a sudden we were able to shift that around. Now, we talked about this over the years. Why did we put the Shia in charge of Iraq? Maybe that's what they wanted or something, because there are more Shia. But we purposely did that, and yet we were still, working on building the hatred toward Iran. And then they wonder, how did we ever get into this mess? And this is a mess. I mean, this is far from over. And I would say right now, it looks like this administration is not winning that so-called war in the Middle East.
Yeah, not at all. And, I certainly remember it, too. I was working for you, and we both felt like we were punched in the gut when we saw the news. And they always say, oh, no one knew. No one could have known. No one. Yeah, a lot of people knew. And now even 16 years later, they're still trying to backtrack and lie their way out of their lies. In fact, there was a little storm over a tweet that Ari Fleischer, you remember him, he was a president's flack, you know, in charge of lying. If you can put that tweet up for half a second. Here's him yesterday trying to explain his way out of the mess that he and his boss caused. This is a long, I'll just read the first one. The Iraq war began 16 years ago tomorrow. There's a myth about the war that I've been meaning to set straight for years. After no dummy MDs were found, the left claimed Bush lied. People died. This accusation itself is a lie. It's time to put it to rest. No, no, Fleischer is still lying. And in fact, we don't often turn to Trump. Sometimes we do with some kudos, but he kind of got it right yesterday in his own very Trumpian way. He was at a tank factory, of all places, and he chose, something just struck him, he decided he wanted to attack McCain. So this is something interesting that he said. He put a lot of the blame rightly on McCain, but also on the neocons. Here's just a little quote from Trump. And the other thing is, we're in a war in the Middle East that McCain pushed so hard. He was calling Bush, President Bush, all the time, get into the Middle East, get into the Middle East. So now we're into that war for $7 trillion. Thousands and thousands of our people have been killed. Millions of people overall. And frankly, we're straightening out now, but it's been a disaster for our country. So that's pretty good, actually. Put the blame where it goes.
Take it when we can get it, yeah. when something's going being said to support our position. We've mentioned many times about Syria. There's a big difference between us invading Syria versus the Russians being invited, and they had a base there and they had an alliance, that sort of thing. So there was a difference. But, of course, I don't believe that Saddam Hussein actually invited us in, and especially since it didn't take long for us to eliminate him.
Yeah.
So we're uninvited guests, and we're still there. And I imagine we still have the biggest base in the world in Iraq, you know, the military base or embassy it is.
Yeah, the embassy. I
mean? The embassy is huge. But there's stirrings in Iraq and in Iran, but in Iraq, the parliament is debating and agitating over should we get rid of all of the American troops, should we kick them all out, or allow them a small contingency? Well, if I had my vote there, I would advise them to say, look, have a clean slate, clean bill of health. But anyway, the important thing is sentiments are shifting. We're not quite in the driver's seats that we would like, whether we have, even if we have the strongest military and we have the sanctions and we have the dollar and all these things, and there's some signs that we are really weakening on this. So they're talking about, they're playing pretty hardball now. We're tired of you Americans. We want you to leave. Of course, you know, the Japanese have been talking about things like that too. But so they are saying that it's time to leave, but all of a sudden we find out that there's some real serious negotiations going on between Iran and Iraq, which from their viewpoint are probably very healthy because Iran wants to compensate for the penalty and the suffering they have done by our policies that were designed to say, well, if we punish the kids and the kids are suffering, we'll blame the leadership in Iran and they'll overthrow their government, which never works. It goes in opposite. But we're still, guilty of participating in a policy which ended up killing a lot of people. It continues to be a big problem.
It continues. And, you mentioned that embassy that we built there. I forget how much it cost, but it was a little bit of money. I was just read the other week that we're actually drawing down 25% of personnel there. So they're cutting back. They're coming home. So it's pretty interesting. But, the second part of our title, who won the Iraq War? And of course, we meant that ironically, because as you've been pointing out, increasingly, it seems to be Iran. That you point out the issue of the Iranian politicians. It used to be, not long ago, just a group that wanted us out. Now you say the debate is between everyone out tomorrow and you can have a couple people left. But contrast that with the visit this past week from Rouhani, the Iranian leader. He went over to Iraq, and he was greeted like a king. He was greeted like the neocons said we'd be greeted. He was greeted like a liberator. He visited every political faction, every religious faction. They agreed on a bunch of new economic deals. that bring the trade between the two countries from $12 billion to $20 billion, so almost doubling trade between the two countries. Iran just sits back, and all of these things are happening because of the foolishness of listening to the talk about unintended consequences.
You know, the press didn't cover it very much because I didn't see too much at all about when our president went over there at Christmas time to visit with the leader in Iraq, and he was actually shunned. I mean, it would have been considered, if under normal circumstances, as pretty a strong insult toward us, because the president couldn't even say hello to the leadership there, and he just turned around and left.
Amazing.
Which means that is really taking a strong position. We have this area called diplomacy, but this is sort of outside of diplomacy. It's just sort of personal reactions at time, and has diplomatic consequences to this. But now the Iranians and Iraq and some other countries, including Russia and a few others, they're making plans now to getting Iran the sanctions. And they have, to a degree, even though they're still suffering tremendously.
Yeah.
Their motivation is there. And if they see some cracks like we're seeing right now with the support for our policies there, I think that there's going to be some alternatives in the trade, and someday the dollar might just get a little bit weaker, and people will actually use an alternative currency because we'll have half the world on sanctions. Nobody will allow to trade with anybody, so they're going to have an alternative.
It's insane, and that's a great point. We have a map, actually. Our friend Tom Luongo, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, he has a really good piece out today that we were both inspired by, but he has a great map. Hey, look at, talk about Iran being isolated, the U.S. sanctions isolating. This is the north-south transport corridor that the Russians are building along with allies. And see, it goes, it avoids Suez Canal, it avoids some other choke points, it goes right through the middle of Iran. This is a big thing, and this is happening because of U.S. policy, because U.S. is trying to keep everyone from trading, and they do trade. And what's interesting is, if you remember, it wasn't long ago that Trump and the neocons said, our goal is to absolutely choke 100% of Iranian oil. And now they realize that's not possible. Now they're saying, well, we want to see it reduced by 25%, which is a big climb down. And just yesterday, Trump granted a new 90-day waiver for Iraq to buy oil from Iran. So this is failing. The policy is failing. There's nothing they can do about it.
That's right. And Iran, is instrumental in now getting along better with the EU than we are, especially since we walked away from that treaty, which made no sense whatsoever. And nobody is saying, yes, the Iranians are cheating. Every time they get a report out of the investigators, they say they're still following all the rules.
Yeah.
And they probably, if they continue to do that, it might not be such a dumb move. Just forget about that. They don't need to prepare for a nuclear war anyway.
Yeah.
Just go about their business and make us look so foolish for saying, oh no, they're building weapons again. Who believes it? And yet the Europeans, they're mercenary. They'd like to trade and get oil. And this pipeline that they're talking about coming up, I think the point you make is so vital, Iran is in the center of this. They're going to have the tremendous benefit from this.
And, we're a prisoner of our so-called alliances, if you think about it. It's totally one-sided. Because of the Saudis being archenemies of Iran and the Israelis wanting to see Iran government overthrown, we are sort of, because we follow rather than lead, we follow their diktats, it's a one-sided thing, and we're the losers of it. And, of course, the neocons, they want to blame Iran for the fact that Iraq and Iran are getting along together so well, but you talked about us leaving the deal. That's what pushed Iran and Iraq into each other's arms.
Yeah, it's. I see Trump, you already quoted Trump and thought it was a positive. And so we have our ups and downs. But I really think that his biggest mistake since he's been, president, has been one where he's been very consistent And that is, what was his position with Iran, you know, during the campaign?
Yeah.
And what has it been since then? And you know, his alliance with Saudi Arabia and also our involvement in Yemen. But it has to be, historically, I think I was going to show that is his biggest blunder ever. And if it's not a natural thing and it doesn't work, and even though we may, you know, make use of it and seem to get benefits for a decade or so, but eventually, look how long it's been become quite evident that the war in Iraq is made no sense. Here we have a president that is very bold and quite willing to say it, but why doesn't he look at our involvement with Iran? Yeah. Sort of like the criticism you're making about what the neocons did in Iraq. So and the neocons are up to their no good, and I guess we should keep working on exposing them for what they really are.
Yeah, well, we will never be done with that, I don't think. I would actually close a little bit differently. I'd just like to draw everyone's attention to some news I think is pretty breaking, and that is that the Venezuelan government arrested the chief of staff to the U.S.-backed president Guaido, who claims he's president of Venezuela. Will that trigger? Pompeo warned earlier today that touching anyone anywhere near Guaido was going to have severe repercussions. Is this the beginning of a crackdown on Guaido's people? It's a good question. Could this trigger an invasion? I think it's possible. One thing just to reflect upon before I turn the mic back over is just imagine if there was a foreign-backed politician in the U.S. who claimed he was president, what would people like Pompeo and Trump do? He would be arrested immediately trying to overthrow the government.
Yeah, and yesterday, of course, we talked about Brazil and moving in that direction, too. And Brazil and Trump, we want to put Brazil in and save us, join, please join NATO and be our friend. And then this could have been a reaction to us getting too cozy with the Brazilian.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. And once again, I believe that this policy we're talking about and the foolishness and total failure of our policy in the Middle East and shock and awe. Well, I think the ultimate shock and awe is going to be that history is going to show that it was one of the stupidest things our country ever did, and that our continuation of policy in that region isn't much better. So, yes, they're shock and awe, and it's just a shame that we couldn't alert the American people back in 2002 and 2003 about the ridiculousness of what we were doing there. But nevertheless, it's the principle of intervention versus non-intervention, and right now it becomes so obvious, and then Trump has been good at pointing out how ridiculous this war has been in Iraq. So I just wish we could get people to apply these principles across the board, because you shouldn't be able to pick and choose and decide who are the good guys and who are the bad guys, rather than just saying, what's best for America? And non-intervention is the best thing for America, for us to mind our own business, take care of our problems here at home, and make sure that we stand for liberty rather than standing for world empire. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.